Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Qualitative Research SIGS podcast series. My name is Jessica Lester, the current chair of the Qualitative Research SIG, and today I'm joined by Sebastian Karcher, who will be sharing with us about the Qualitative Data Repository. Sebastian is the Associate Director for the Qualitative Data Repository, where he oversees daily operations ranging from data curation to technology implementation and testing. His publications have appeared in journals in both social science and information science, and he is the author, most recently, of Rethinking Data Sharing in Human Participant Protection and Social Science Research, Applications from the Qualitative Realm, co-authored with Desi Kirilova and published in Data Science Journal. Sebastian is an active educator on data and technology issues. He regularly teaches workshops on managing qualitative data for researchers and data professionals. And he is the co-creator of an online course on managing qualitative data under commission from the Social Science Research Council, as well as one of the principal editors of the Author Carpentry series of lessons developed at Caltech. He is also a regular contributor to scholarly open source software, in particular Zotero, and the citation style language. He holds a PhD in political science from Northwestern University. Sebastian, thank you for joining me today. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you so much, Jessica.
To begin, could you share a bit around what the Qualitative Repository actually is?
So the Qualitative Data Repository, in very short form, is a data repository, a domain repository focused on qualitative social science data. And let me unpack a couple of these things. So as a data repository, what we do is we take researchers' data. We curate it so that it's easy to find. We check that it's in order, and then we publish it and we preserve it for the long term. Mm-hmm. When I say qualitative data, we have a relatively broad view of that, but the general approach is that there are a lot of data repositories available to researchers dealing with traditional quantitative data. So think survey data, experimental data with qualitative reads, most of the things that we could imagine in spreadsheet form. There's much less for researchers that work with qualitative data. So think interviews, focus group, maybe image-based research, anything that's not easily codified into numbers. And our mission is to present a home to allow for the preservation and sharing of that data. We have a focus in the social sciences, and we understand that very broadly. So essentially anything that involves interactions with human beings and is of, broadly speaking, qualitative or multi-method focus, we are happy to take. And when I say domain repository, that's means A, that we have this disciplinary focus. It also usually means that we do active curation. With a lot of data repositories, you find they're essentially upload places where researchers can deposit their data, but no one looks over it. It's presented as deposited. We have an active process where we interact with people who deposit their data with us. We make sure it's in good shape. We make sure it's safe to post. We advise on various parts of the process, we also help with the curation of metadata, that is the structured information that helps people to search the data. So mm-hmm. In the end, it's a more polished product that's easier to find. Mm-hmm.
Can you share a bit about the history of the Qualitative Data Repository in relationship to its development as well as its focus?
Yeah, of course. So the Qualitative Data Repository is fairly new. I think the conception goes as early as 2011, 2012, mm-hmm. but we went online in 2014. And its origins are actually in political science, which among the social science disciplines was relatively early on in adopting strong standards on transparency expectations in research and data sharing. But those were very much focused on quantitative data. And then qualitative researchers, initially here at Syracuse University, that's Colin Ellman, who is faculty in political science, but then also more broadly, we also have Diana Kapuscheski, who's the deputy director, who is also political science faculty at Georgetown, started thinking about, okay, how can we do the same thing for political science? And then they applied for NSF funding and got sizable and since renewed funding to start this data repository, which is housed at the Maxwell School at Syracuse University, but is open for researchers across the world. And in fact, we actually only have one, I think, data collection from a Syracuse researcher, and many data coming to us from across the world. We just published something from a public health researcher who's faculty in Bangladesh.
So for qualitative researchers writ large, what can you say about what QDR can afford them?
So what I think a lot of what we do is guidance. There are fairly good guidelines for if I want to share my traditional quantitative data set, what do I do? And there's much less of that for qualitative researchers. And we seek to provide a home for that that isn't just some rules, but an active conversation that helps to make sure the data is presented in a way that's both useful from a data perspective, but also true to how researchers themselves think about their data. So that's, we call that our curation process. Curation exists for quantitative data as well. What we do differently, I think, is that we engage in more of a dialogue and we really seek to understand what's behind the data to do justice to the depth that qualitative research often has. So that's on the intake part, and that often starts very early on. In many cases, we start with researchers as they're planning their research. So we'll advise them, as you probably know, many grant organizations now require data management plans that specify how you treat your data during, but also after the research. And we'll work with researchers in writing their data management plans so that it's up to standard and passes muster, both individually, but also frequently, as you mentioned in your introduction, in terms of workshops. So starting very early on and then up to the point where researchers finish their research, they want to deposit their data. We work with them to make sure everything is in order. We advise them on how to de-identify data, right? This is a big topic that often we promise confidentiality to our participants, and we work with researchers to make sure that what they give us and what will then be published is actually de-identified, confidential, living up to that very important promise that we make. So that's that part. And then the next thing is we publish that data, we catalog it in various more broadly searchable interfaces. So you can search the data at QDR, but we are also listed in various meta search engines, such as SHARE, which is by the Center for Open Science, or the DataCite catalog, and we're continuously working on being listed more. So we make that data more discoverable. We assign DOIs to the data. DOIs are digital object identifiers. These are these numbers. They start with a 10 dot and then have some other stuff behind that that provides stable links and are part of what's now universally recommended as a good data citation. So we tell research, if you use this data, please cite it and includes that DOI. So we help people who deposit data with us to get appropriate credit for other people consulting and using their data by providing a template for data citation and by making these citations stable over time using DOIs. Mm-hmm. And I probably forgot some things, but I think that's kind of the gist of what we help qualitative researchers with.
And could you share a few examples of the type of data QDR is currently archiving?
Yes, absolutely. So we have some data that's historical data. So we have people who collected archival research, both in Latin America on changes in the party structure, so those were more recent archives, but also on the history of World War I or on Kennedy's views on foreign policy. So those would just be scans or images of archival records. Probably the largest share of our research are interviews. So those are just interview transcripts, or in some cases not transcripts, but just the notes from the interviews where no recordings and then transcripts were made. Mm-hmm. In some cases, these are on the record interviews. So we have a very nice collection of interviews with indigenous leaders from Latin America, and those are all on the record, so they are named. The majority, though, are de-identified and range very broadly. The project I just mentioned talked to doctors at our hospitals and health facilities in Bangladesh. We have a project from Nigeria, which are actually focus group transcripts, which is another area where we've seen a number of things come in, and they talk about maternal health by talking to midwives and traditional birth attendants and recent mothers in Nigeria. And we just got in our first genuine education project, which we're very excited about, which deals with the dual challenges that student athletes face and being top-notch athletes and students at the same time. And we're actually very excited to be working with educational researchers. I think there's a lot of very interesting qualitative research in there. There's a great tradition in education research of sharing resources and data, and we hope to add more. Mm-hmm. From that particular perspective.
Fascinating examples. So if a qualitative researcher is considering depositing data, what would you view as some of the critical considerations for them?
So the first thing we actually always ask researchers about is their IRB and informed consent procedure, especially when we're looking at older research. We often find very stringent conditions on the use of data. And so if you promise your participants that only I and three other people will have access to the data, or you promise all data will be destroyed after I complete my research, there is obviously no ethical way we can hold that data. So the first thing that we advise is to think about the language that you write in your IRB application or your ethics board application. You know, these things are called different things depending on your country, and on, in your informed consent language, so what you actually promise participants. There are, on our website, there are some suggestions for good language to use. There are other places like such as ICPSR that has good templates for language that you use in informed consent that's truthful, easy to understand, and allows you to share that data through a data repository with other researchers. So that would be number one. The second thing, and that's related, is to be, if possible, in touch early. If you plan to share your data from early on, a lot of the things like documentation to collect, like making sure you're ethically allowed to share it, like how is it organized, all those types of things are much easier if you keep them in mind from the beginning rather than organizing all the materials at the last minute when you actually want to share your data. But that said, you know, we realize this is a new tradition. So if you started 5 years ago, you almost certainly didn't think about data sharing in qualitative research. And we're very happy to work with you if you just finished and now want to deposit and haven't thought about this before. And then the first thing to do would typically just be to get in touch with us. We do have a project a proposal form where you just tell us a little bit about the basics of your research proposal of the data that you're planning to download, and then we usually just get in touch and talk through some of the general considerations, give you some advice how to organize it, make sure that you're ethically allowed to share, those types of things, and then tell you how, what to do and how to actually give us the data, which also varies somewhat. It's usually just an online interface, but in some cases where we are concerned that the data is particularly sensitive, we give you more secure means and encryption facilities to get the data to us in a way that's particularly secure and suitable for sensitive data.
Mm-hmm. So can you share a little bit about other ways that QDR works with its constituents?
Yeah, so this has always been really a key part of our mission, that we're our data repository, and storing, preserving, making accessible data is our key mission, but it's by far not our only mission. Mm. One thing that I've mentioned is teaching data management, and we do this a lot. We do this in various fora. We go to academic conferences and offer courses there. We teach that as part of the Summer Institute for Qualitative Research Methods that's here at, it's an international institute, but that's here at Syracuse University in June. We've done a couple of webinars on that in various for us, and I think you can actually find recordings of most of them online. So big part is pedagogy. Pedagogy also extends to what we supply as information on our website. So we have a lot of information for people working with qualitative data and broadly thinking about sharing it on our website. That's qdr.org. And one area that may be particularly of interest is a large section on research involving human participants that goes through how do I work with an IRB, how do I write an effective consent script, how do I de-identify data, all these types of things that are broadly relevant to all research, but from a perspective of qualitative researchers. Mm-hmm. What else do we do? We try to make our technology work with qualitative data. So we had a workshop with providers of qualitative analysis software, and sometimes called CACTAS software recently, right? So people from Atlas TI and Vivo and a lot of the smaller, newer players like Deduce, Quirkus, et cetera, to try to see how can we work with that software that's increasingly popular with qualitative researchers and use that to facilitate then later sharing the data to the extent that researchers want to do that. And I think there's a lot of interest from the software side there, and are getting a lot of interest from the researcher side there. So kind of building the bridge between technology and the researchers, that's another big area. And then I guess the last thing is kind of building a bridge between the researcher and the information science community in making sure that when, for example, information scientists talk about standards for data sharing and transparency, when journals write policy, those types of things, mm-hmm. That the perspective of qualitative researchers is represented. And there are a couple of other institutions, but there aren't very many who do what we do. And so we try to make sure that we're a voice at the table that kind of speaks both languages. Most of us actually have a background in qualitative research. Certainly our academic directors do, but also I did qualitative research and fieldwork for my dissertation. But then also a deep background in information science, so that we can kind of translate between those two camps that aren't, you know, opposed, but often don't really know or understand each other.
Mm-hmm. And is QDR playing a particular role in the archiving and scholarly publishing community as well?
So in the archiving community, we are closely associated with other social science data repositories. There is in fact an alliance of social science data repositories that comprises ICPSR, the Harvard Dataverse, the Odom Institute, us, the Roper Center, which does public opinion, and a couple of other institutions that, and we both do events together, for example, talking to journals about best practices in data policies, those types of things. But we also have joint agreements for data stewardship. So should one of us go out of business, someone else will take over. So again, always thinking about the long-term sustainability of the data and making sure it's available for the long term. We are trying to work as closely as possible with publishers. And one thing that we are working on now that we're particularly excited about is a technology that we call Annotation for Transparent Inquiry. And there, the idea is that instead of having data just kind of associated with an article as a whole, we found that with a lot of qualitative research, there is kind of a link between particular passages in the text and a piece of data, say an excerpt from an interview or a piece of evidence that you found in an archive or something like that. And so what we're doing is we're working with annotation technology that then allows you to link that data to that particular piece of the article. And we're doing that together with both publishers and a technology company called Hypothesis that provides open source technology web annotations that allow us to do that. And we're very excited about that. And that's kind of a very interesting way in which data archives and publishers work together to make articles richer, make the research more transparent, make the reading more interesting, and make it work for the particular concerns of qualitative researchers and not just have us follow the templates that the earlier adopters in quantitative work have provided.
It's a really exciting development. Sebastian, if listeners want to learn more about the Qualitative Data Repository and the breadth of your work, where might they turn?
So the first thing would be our website. That's qdr.org. So QDR, just the letters, .org. We are on Twitter. That's QD Repository, so Qualitative Data Repository. I think you also just find us by searching for Qualitative Repository, Data Repository. And then I'm always happy to get emails. That's skarcher, so skarcher at syr.edu. So skarcher at syr.edu. And all of those are great ways to be in touch with us, and we're excited to hear from you both if you have ideas for things we should be doing, if you want to help planning your data collection, or if you have data that you're considering depositing but maybe aren't quite sure.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for sharing.
Thank you so much for having me, Jessica.